Chapter 19. The Goliath Corporation. The Isle of Man had been an independent corporate state within England since it was appropriated for the greater fiscal good in 1963. It had hospitals and schools, a university, its own fusion reactor, and also, leading from Douglas to Kennedy Graviport in New York, the world's only privately run gravitube. The Isle of Man was home to almost 200,000 people who did nothing but support, or support the support, of the one enterprise that dominated the small island, the Goliath Corporation. I hopped on the Skyrail at the Brunel Shopping Centre and went the three stops to Swindon's Clary-Lamar Travelport, where I caught the bullet train to Saknussemm International. From there, I jumped on the next overmantel gravitube with seconds to spare and was at James Tarbuck Graviport in Liverpool in a journey time of just over an hour. The country's hyper-efficient public transport network was the Common Sense Party's greatest achievement so far. Very few people used cars for journeys over 10 miles these days. The system had its detractors, of course. The car parking consortiums were naturally appalled, as was the motorway service industry, which had taken the extraordinary step of producing decent food in order to win back customers. I made good use of the time by calling Landon and telling him all about the alternative Friday's offer to replace our idle and mostly bedridden headbanger of a son with a well-groomed, upright and responsible member of society. And Landon had agreed with me that we'd keep the smelly one we had, thank you very much. Once I'd tubed to Tarbuck, I took the high-speed Ekrano plane all the way to the distinctly unimaginatively titled Goliathopolis, on what had once been the Isle of Man. Despite losing nearly everything during the dramatic St. Zivilcix adventure back in 1988, the vast multinational had staged an impressive comeback, mostly, it was said, by hiding its net worth and filing for bankruptcy on a subsidiary company that conveniently emerged from the distant past to take a lot of the flak. Time foolery was suggested, but despite an investigation by the ChronoGuard's Fiscal Chronoption Unit, which looked very closely at such matters, no wrongdoing had been found, or could be proved. After that, it didn't take long for the corporation to re-establish itself, and Goliathopolis was once again the Hong Kong of the Western Hemisphere, a forest of glassy towers striding up the hillside towards Snae Fell. Even before we left the dock at Tarbuck International, I had the idea that I was being watched. As the Goliath ground effect transport jetted across the Irish Sea, several of the Goliath employees on the craft looked at me cautiously. And when I sat down in the coffee shop, the people near me moved away. It was kind of flattering, really, but since I trounced the corporation in the very biggest way possible, at least once, they clearly regarded me as something of a threat. How big a threat was revealed to me when we docked at Goliathopolis 40 minutes later. There was a welcoming committee already waiting for me. But I don't mean welcoming committee in the ironic sense of large men with no necks and blackjacks. They had laid out the red carpet, bedecked the jetty with bunting, and put on a baton-twirling demonstration by the Goliathopolis majorettes. More important, the entire upper echelons of Goliath management had turned out to greet me, which included the president, John Henry Goliath V, and a dozen or so of his executive officers, all of whom had a look of earnest apprehension etched on their pasty faces. As someone who'd cost the company dearly over the past 2 decades, I was clearly feared, and possibly even revered. "Welcome back to Goliathopolis," said John Henry politely, shaking my hand warmly. "I hope that your stay is a happy one, and that whatever brings you here can be a matter of mutual concern. I hardly need to stress the respect in which we hold you, and would hate that you might find reason to act upon us without first entertaining the possibility of a misunderstanding." He was a large man. It looked as though someone had handed his parents a blueprint of a baby and told them to scale it up by a factor of 1 1/4. This is a joke, right? On the contrary, Miss Next, based on past experiences, we have decided that complete and utter disclosure is the only policy worth pursuing as far as your good self is concerned. You'll excuse me if I remain unconvinced by your perceived honesty. It's not honesty, Ms. Next. You personally cost us over £100 billion in lost revenue. So we regard our openness as a sound business strategy, albeit of an abstract nature. Because of this, there is no door closed to you, no document unreadable, no member to whom you may not speak. I hope I'm candid. Very, I replied, put off my guard by the corporation's attitude. I have a matter I'd like to discuss with you. Naturally, replied John Henry. The majorettes would like to perform, if that's all right with you. Of course. So we watched the majorettes march up and down for 20 minutes to music of the Goliath brass band, and when it was over, I was driven in John Henry's Bentley toward the Goliath head office, a mighty 110-story building right at the heart of Goliathopolis. Your son and family are well? Asked John Henry, who, aside from a few more grey hairs, didn't seem to have aged a great deal since we last met. He fixed me with his piercing green eyes and poured on the natural charm he'd been blessed with. I expect you know full well they are, I replied, and everything else about me. On the contrary, protested John Henry, we thought that if even the sniff of surveillance was detected, you might decide to take action, and action from you, as we have seen to our cost, is never less than devastating to our interests. Ah, I murmured, suddenly realizing why there had been a deafening silence from Goliath over the years. So, how can we help? Asked John Henry. If, he added, we can help at all. I want to find out what advances you have made in transfictional travel. John Henry raised his eyebrows and smiled genially. I never thought it would remain a secret from you forever. You've been leaving Outlander probes scattered all over the book world. The research and development on the book project has been somewhat hit or miss, I'll admit that, replied John Henry candidly. To be honest, I had expected you to call us sooner than you have.
I've been busy.
Of course. And since you are here, perhaps you would grace us with your comments on the technical aspects of our project.
I promise nothing, but I'd certainly like to see what you're up to.
The car drove toward the glassy modern towers of the corporate center of the multinational and past well-tailored executives going about their administrative business. A few minutes later, we pulled up outside the front entrance of the Goliath headquarters, which was comfortably nestled into the hillside.
I don't suppose that you would want to freshen up or anything before we show you around, asked John Henry hopefully.
And miss something you might try and hide from me, I answered. No, if it's all the same to you, I'd really like to see how far you've gotten.
Very well, said John Henry, without any sense of concern. Come with me.
We walked into the expansive lobby and crossed not to the elevators or the Apollogarium, where I'd been last time, but to where a golf cart was at the ready. A curious crowd of Goliath employees had gathered to watch our progress with undisguised inquisitiveness. I couldn't think it was just me. I don't suppose many of them have ever seen John Henry Goliath either. We drove out of the lobby and into a tunnel that led directly back into the hillside. It was crudely utilitarian after the simple elegance of the entrance vestibule, with roughly concreted walls and lit by overhead track lights. The roadway was smooth concrete, and there were cable conduits attached to the walls. The subterranean vaults of Goliath R&D were at least half a mile inside the hill, and on the journey, John Henry and I chatted amiably about national politics and global economics. Surprisingly, a more intelligent and well-informed conversation about current affairs I have yet to have. I might even have liked him, but for the utter ruthlessness and singularity of purpose that ran through his speech. Excusable in a person of little or no power, but potentially devastating in one such as John Henry Goliath. We encountered three different levels of security on the way,
each of them waved aside by John Henry. Beyond the third security checkpoint was a large set of steel blast doors, and after abandoning the golf cart, we proceeded on foot. John Henry had his tie knot scanned to confirm his identity, and the doors slid open to let us in. I gasped at the sight that met my eyes. Their technology had gone beyond the small metal probe I'd already seen. It had gone further. Much further.